So my story. As a little girl coming up, it might sound weird to say, but I had this wish, and it was the same wish forever, for as long as I can remember. And my wish as a child was just to be normal, to be like everyone else with their clean hair and their clothes that fit and all the things that made them normal, their parents who showed up to conferences. But my normal was a little different. My mom, I'm super not emotional. I'm just really shaky. My mom is a drug addict, and so that was definitely something as a small child and then a teenager and then an adult facing that has been a challenge. And I don't have a father, and I have a stepfather, but he's also a child molester, so I found out. So my background's a little different from the people I look at and consider normal. Police and social workers and shelters and homelessness, these are things that I'm acquainted with. So that's my version of normal. I want to take it out so bad. Thank you. I know you said not to, but I can't stand still. So my version of normal obviously is a little bit different in comparison, and I know that. But growing up, that was my wish. So on every birthday cake and with every shooting star, my wish is I just want to be like everyone else. I want to be like the little girls that I see in school, and I want the parents. You know, I want to go home with them. I love them. And so I remember one day, my junior year in high school, I walked in the cafeteria with my friends, and we're loud and rambunctious like always. And typical recruiters are there, you know, colleges and military. And I look over and I see this woman who to me looked like she was 10 feet tall and made of steel, and she scared me a lot. But something about her, I mean, she radiated fierceness, but like perfection. And so I'm looking at this woman, and I think, honestly, if I'm telling the truth, I was staring at this woman, like maybe borderline awkward. Like if I look at you and tell this, it's getting weird. So I'm staring at this woman through this whole lunch period, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I don't know. I want to talk to her, but I'm scared to talk to her. So I'm telling my friends, I want to talk to this woman, but I have no idea what I'm going to say, and I don't know who she is or what she does. And so I'm staring at her this whole time, and I finally work up the courage just at the very end of lunch, you know, that safe period where I can walk out quickly if she doesn't look at me. And I go up to her and I say, "Hi." That is as far as I planned this out. So I said, "Hi." And her in her fierce tallness looks down at me and stares at me for a minute. It's really awkward now because I had nothing left. And I knew she was waiting, like there was more coming from me. And I did, "Hi." "Okay." And after a minute, she resumes her position and she's back at the table. And I just remember being terrified of this woman, fully terrified. But also while I'm looking at her, I'm like, I don't know what she is, but I want to be just like her when I grow up. That's it. That whatever she is, whatever she has, I want to know, I want to do it. And that's what I'm going to be when I grow up. And I found out a couple hours later that she was a Marine Corps drill instructor. That's why she was so scary. And so that was it for me. That moment, that day in that cafeteria changed everything for me. My background and the cards that I knew and the things that I was dealt, it didn't matter anymore because I knew what I was doing now because I met this woman who changed everything. And so the following year, 2 days later, after graduating high school, I was on a bus on the way down to Parris Island to become a Marine, just like her. And so here we are. I'm 17. You know, I'm grown. And I'm on this bus, and I'm going down this one-lane road in the middle of the night with all these people, and nobody's speaking because I think everyone is smelling the same fear that I do. At the same time, I'm wondering if we're all just going to get human trafficked at the end of this because I don't know anyone here. And we pull up to this building, and it's got this dim little light on it, and it's the middle of the night. Next thing you know, the doors come crashing open, and this guy is jumping on this bus, and he is massive, and he is loud, and he is yelling all of these directions. "Do this, get out there, we're going up, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "Ah." Oh my God, what did I get myself into? And from that moment, I mean, it was pure chaos. And that chaos can describe the next 3 months of Marine Corps recruit training for me. Yeah, just a little bit. So, looking at recruit training, I mean, recruit training is a moment where you're kind of stripped of everything that makes you a person and an individual, and I'm brainwashing. I like to call it team spirit. Okay, so we're stripped of our personal belongings, and we're stripped of even the words I, me, and we for 3 months. And yes, there's hell to pay if you say one of those, so don't say it. But the point is to remove that individual and really build that cohesion and that care of one another instead of I, me, and we. In recruit training, yes, okay, Marine Corps, it was hard. It was physically demanding. There was a lot of exercise, and there was a lot of yelling, and it was chaos, like I said. There were classes, martial arts, weapons qualifications, swim qualifications, and so that was hard. But then it was physically and emotionally challenging. I mean, you're stripped, like I said, of your privileges and of your freedoms and your belongings. You're stripped of individuality, and you are forced to push yourself harder. And then when you think you have hit what you think is as far as you can go, it doesn't matter because they're going to yell at you and you're going to keep going anyway. So you're pushed harder than you think you can actually go. And when it comes down to being homesick, the way you communicate is with a letter in an envelope and a stamp in the mail. It's so weird, I know. So you know, you look forward to that. That's Marine Corps recruit training. And it was definitely hard, but to me, I loved it. It was fun. It was awesome for me. Yes, hard, but awesome. And the day I graduated boot camp, I remember being just taller that day, taller than I may ever stand again in my life, because I knew there that I got a little piece of that normal that I was chasing for so long. I am someone now, right? I am normal. I fit in just a little bit, but I'm here. And so now it's time to go to work. Boot camp's over, and all right, welcome to the real Marine Corps. We call it the fleet. And I think I learned within minutes that that was a man's world. No offense, guys. When I say it was a man's world, I mean that less than 8% of the Marine Corps is made up of women. So it was a man's world. My bosses were men. My peers were men. My subordinates were men. My entire team was men. The standards were made by men. It was a man's world. And when I say it was a man's world, I mean the jokes were man jokes. They were misogynistic. They talked about women like sluts and whores and objects, and that's just what we were to them. Okay, I choose not to, but it doesn't matter what I say. And then there was a very vocal group of men who were happy to say, you don't belong here. You shouldn't be here. We don't want you here. You're not going to make it anyway. Okay, well, I'm here, you know, but I hear you. But I also met really good people in the Marine Corps, one of which is my mentor, and he's still my mentor now, Donald Praska. And he was another big, giant, loud, burly guy. But he never went easy on me. He never gave me anything that I didn't earn, and he pushed me very hard all the time. And when I made a mistake, there was hell to pay, but his version of hell to pay also came with a lesson, and I like to think of that as empathy. The way he challenged me, or maybe gave me a lesson, it came with empathy, and it didn't ruin my future. He gave me a chance. He realized I was 17, and there was learning to happen and growth to happen. And when it came time to start growing and really stepping into the roles that we were afforded, when I had questions, he would plainly say, I don't know, figure it out. Huh? Okay, I'll figure it out. And when I had a problem and I would say, okay, I think we can solve it by doing this, he would say, whatever, make it happen. And I know it sounds a little snarky, but really what that is empowerment. At 17 and 18 years old, I was trusted with people and jobs and tasks with the empowerment of figure it out and make it happen. And that, to me, was very instilling of confidence. You know, it gave me an opportunity to think for myself, autonomy, right? I had opportunities, and instead of having to ask and beg for, here's my plan and please let me do it, it wasn't that. It was go fix it. I don't care what the problem is, fix it. Okay, cool. Thank you. I got this. And that was it. I got this. And because of him, I had a very fortunate career. I was promoted pretty quickly. By 19, I was considered a leader of Marines and NCO. And I realize now that that's young. At the time, I thought, you know, I was the boss. Okay. But by 19, I'm like, yes, I got this. We're going to make things happen. And so when I look at now my life in the federal world, I see, you know, we check in 9 to 5 or whatever, 7:30 to 4. And you check in and you get the job done to the best of your ability. And you check out and you go home. In the military in general, it's not like that. At 19 years old, your job is to get the job done, yes, and to do it well, but also you have to take care of everyone that works for you, your team. So the job didn't just include getting the job done. The job included making sure my Marines were in good shape, making sure my Marines were able to take care of their jobs and their skills were sharp, making sure that their finances were in order because they couldn't deploy if their finances weren't in order, and making sure they stayed out of jail and out of trouble, and making sure that they were in a good place mentally when something real happened, like death or divorce or illness of their children. And that happened. 19. I don't know anything about any of that, but that's the job. And so we move into our first deployment. And like I said, I have no actual life experience. So that first deployment was my first deployment. It wasn't a first for all of my guys, but it was a first for me, and it was a first for many of us. And so it's scary. And suddenly this pedestal that I was standing on of being this leader and this, I'm the boss, we got this, it didn't matter. Because now we're going to the Middle East, and that is terrifying. And now I'm the boss, and I have to make choices. And what if my choices impact their life? Oh, my God, some of these guys have kids. What if the things that I say are the wrong things to say, and some of them don't go home to their wives and their kids, and now that's on me? And that's scary. And so we deploy, and the days come, and the weeks pass, and the months pass. And, yeah, the job is hard, and it's hot during the day, and it's freezing at night. Okay, and we're back to writing letters home with stamps. and I could tell you stories, you know, about the deployment. I could tell you about that time I went with the Navy SEALs and stayed in a safe house next to a bunch of insurgents because of a really cool mission. Or I could tell you about that time that we almost saved all of these burn victims, but we didn't save them all. There were only two that walked out the next day. I could tell you stories about surgeries that I had participated in. And for those of you who are doctors, I am not one. Not even close. So I had hands. And I could tell you all of these stories, but what it really comes down to at the end of the day and in those environments and at that age, it was all just about learning. It was learning how to navigate these environments. And really, yes, the mission changes. The mission changes every day today. I work in the government. It changes every day. But what doesn't change is our love for one another, the people who stand by us to get us through it, that loyalty and that care and that humanity. Throwback, humanity, Hopkins. And so that was definitely a lesson that I took from that. And before I closed my Marine Corps chapter, I had to do one thing that I told myself I would do the day I graduated boot camp, and that was to become a female drill instructor, just like that woman who I met that day in the cafeteria who gave me an opportunity, who let me change my stripes and change my future. And so I went to become a drill instructor, and yes, that was hard. There's another whole boot camp that the drill instructors have to do, by the way. They should tell you that first. When I say it was the hardest thing I've ever done, I will raise my hand to God. That was worse than giving labor because it went on for 3 years. 3 years of sleeping maybe 2 or 3 hours a night for 91 straight days, and 3 years of running and screaming and trying to get 100 women in a room that's continuously moving to listen to you and understand you. Because in a different environment, now that I've been there in the Middle East, you have to hear me. You have to hear me. And I have to make you hear me because your next move could be the one that kills you or her or all of us. So being a drill instructor was a very heavy, heavy job, and it was hard, but it was fun. But most of all, it meant teaching these women things and making them now push themselves further than they thought they could go, and teaching them things that I was never taught as a child or as a young lady, like self-respect, worth, how to have dignity and humility. And so, as I closed out my Marine Corps career, I have to say that because of that one day in a cafeteria and that one woman and becoming a Marine and meeting an awesome mentor and having tools and opportunities and skills handed to me, it's afforded me everything that I have now and every opportunity that has yet to come. So when I look back and I think of this little girl with this silly dream to be normal, to be like everybody else, why have such a small dream? Little girls should have big dreams. Not to be like everybody else. And the truth is, by being like no one else, I am somebody that I respect now. And so I say, to hell with normal. Be a force.